importance and discuss their limitations. You're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. I want to note as part of this land acknowledgement that decolonization should go beyond just acknowledging the land we're located on and center land back, across and away from Turtle Island. In this series, I am hoping to move beyond the label of content warnings, or CW for shorthand, by asking some hard questions such as, who are content warnings for? Who do they serve? Who are they excluding? And do they help us bear witness to violence and trauma safely? Or do they shield us from uncomfortable truths? For this first episode, the introduction is going to be a little longer and more in-depth than usual. First of all, what better way to begin than with a content warning itself regarding the terms, topics, and content that will be talked about throughout this podcast? This show will include discussions of violence, colonialism, discrimination, trauma, mental health, and other difficult topics. We recognize how this affects people differently, and we encourage you to please take care of yourself, however that may look for you. And when you're ready, we invite you to engage with this material. You can find this series later on CITR.ca. I also find it really important to first introduce myself so that you're aware of the experiences, biases, and expectations that guide me as a contributor of this podcast. My desire is that this mini-series becomes another addition to the conversations and work that is already happening on the ground in our communities. My name is Kabil. My pronouns are ella, ella, they, she. I'm a queer diasporic settler on these lands, and I am originally from what is known as Mexico. I'm able-bodied as well as neurodivergent. I'm currently producing material from the Global North, and I am grateful to be learning with all of you. In my third year of university, I met a professor who made it explicit that they were not going to use trigger warnings as part of the syllabus or during class when sensitive topics were being discussed. The reasoning that was given by this prof was that violence and misogyny have always been a part of history and lived realities, and content warnings created a misconception of the context in which the material was created. This event raised a lot of questions for most of us who had seen them used not only in learning spaces, but also in movies, social media posts, music videos, podcasts, and even conversations. As students, we had not only come to regard these warnings as a social norm, but also an act of concern towards our well-being. Suddenly, students started having conversations in private about what was the right thing to do, and if this professor was only considering her specific experience when deciding to not use trigger warnings. Since then, I have been wondering about the politics around them, their importance for equity-seeking groups, and the ways in which they have been misappropriated. In this first episode, we will be going through the history, definition, and general conversations around content warnings and trigger warnings. So get comfy and be ready to listen. To inquire about content warnings, I went around to ask people about their thoughts and familiarity with the topic.
Hi, this is Kabil, your host, and I went around asking about content warnings and trigger warnings. So, what is your understanding of content warnings and trigger warnings?
My understanding? I believe they're intended to give an audience a heads up, really, about what's to come in the media that they're consuming. Are they always effective? I'm not exactly sure.
Where have you seen them?
I think probably most... I actually see them a lot on, like, YouTube videos now. I feel like people are getting more and more aware of when they need to use them and why. Sometimes I hear them on podcasts, but I feel like less on, like, big movies, like, big movie screens. Like, the other day I went to go see Dune, and there could have been a lot of content warnings on that movie, but there's nothing. So I think that's also interesting how... like those big movie boxes don't usually
like
add.
Expected.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I don't know.
What are your thoughts on them?
I think it's important for... Well, I actually don't know who goes about making the trigger warnings and, like, what education they have in terms of, I don't know, how harmful the content could be for certain audiences. But I guess maybe, like, some more education and thought would be a good thing to put into content warnings. I also think that they could expand to more than just what they are right now. Like, I feel like they're kind of narrow as to, like... like there's, oh, also, okay, sorry, I started thinking about like how there's often content warnings about sex, but like,
ah, that's
like
interesting.
Sex is like when it's like totally consensual as well.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting what it says to like people about kind
sex.
Of like what sex is in
yeah.
society.
Yeah.
But obviously, yeah, like there's a lot of ones about, it's like the big things like, I don't know, like violence, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or like assault, or
mm-hmm.
I think that it could be a little bit more broadened as like kind of what are the themes of the movie even? What is it about? Just to give people, it's hard because you don't want to spoil it, but
yes.
you also like want to tell people what's to come in case they aren't able to like deal with that in that day or that moment. So yeah, I don't know. It's tricky.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
No worries.
What is your understanding of content warnings and trigger warnings?
My understanding is that they function to basically warn a viewer or a listener that there's going to be sensitive topics being discussed in what they're about to watch or listen to that could trigger a negative reaction in them and may not be content or something that they want to engage with in the moment necessarily. So it's just a warning. I feel like especially trigger warning is kind of, it's become misused, I think, in general language. I just feel like it's kind of lost its meaning and people don't take it as seriously as what it originally was meant to be used for.
Yeah. Where have you seen them?
Usually like, I mean, beginnings of like movies and things like that, if there's like anything, even just like sexual or like, even like profanity, people will give content warnings, and then trigger warnings specifically, like, will make fun of the idea of a trigger warning often online, and like, are like, don't get triggered, I'm gonna say something crazy. I don't know, it's just one of those things that like reactionary right wing people, I think, have stolen.
Co-opted.
Yeah, co-opted, exactly.
Yeah.
Co-opted as a term and like cheapened its usefulness, and now it makes it hard for people to use trigger warnings and be taken seriously.
So you definitely see a difference between trigger warnings and content.
Yeah, I think they have different connotations.
Okay.
Or it seems like, it feels like they have different connotations. Like, one is more reactive. Like, content warning is just like, oh, they're... This is in this thing you're about to see, but I feel like trigger implies more like you may have a reaction to this. If that makes sense.
You kind of talked of this, but what are your thoughts on them?
Like, they're very useful tools, and I don't know. Ironically, I feel like people get triggered by trigger warnings. They're like, people can't handle things these days. Like, why do you need a warning? Blah, blah, blah. But it's always...
Last generation.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just, it's a useful tool. Like, you're not always in the mood or in the headspace or ready to read or watch certain things. And I don't think you should just be bombarded with information that you're not ready for all the time. It's just a useful tool, and I don't know why it's become such a...
Conversation.
Like, it should be a conversation, but... I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why people like get so mad at them, I guess, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Thank you. What is your understanding of content warnings and trigger warnings?
Like to make people aware of anything potentially harmful that could be in whatever they're about to see or hear, be presented with.
Okay. Where have you seen them?
I've seen them a lot on social media, like in captions, or like it'll be like the first slide of like a series. And then I've also like been given like verbal ones. Like someone will be talking, they'll stop themselves and be like, wait, content warning.
Like in a conversation.
Yeah, but then it's interesting also because like you can't say like what the content warning's about sometimes. You just have to be like content warning. but then like it could be eat for anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
if someone's like,
if someone's like, oh, content warning, but then they don't want to say the actual what the content warning is about because the mention of it might
be tricky.
Yeah. So it's like weird. Anyways. Yeah,
that's interesting. What are your thoughts on them?
Honestly, I don't know. I think they're definitely like, I think it's like more so the fact that people are aware that like you can't just like put any information anywhere and expect it to like not sometimes be harmful to people. But so I feel like it's good in that it's like signaling that that is something people are more aware of. But like also like I was saying, like you say the content warning itself is sometimes the mention of. I'm struggling
I know what you mean, of the event or the topic.
Yeah.
The content warning itself is like mentioning the material that could provide the trigger or necessitates the warning in and of itself.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting that you bring that up. Also, it's like, it's funny for me because I really appreciate content warnings as someone that like I think does have responses sometimes to like sensitive materials. I get a lot of the warnings in classes though where it's still required for me to read and like engage with the materials. So oftentimes it is just sort of like the preemptive, like, oh God, and then I'm like with that, just basically,
right.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still like I have to engage with the materials to sort of like be able to like participate in the class.
Mm-hmm.
But I really appreciate them for the most part.
Yeah.
Sometimes they like feel a bit like almost, I don't know. I for the most part really appreciate them, but it is like sort of like a weird, I don't know, always know when to give one or when to not give one,
yeah.
Or what could be like a material that would necessitate like putting a content warning on something. But I've seen them a lot,
yeah.
To answer that one question. I see them mostly on like, yeah, social media apps, a lot on Instagram. But I've noticed that a lot of it as well is with like material that I think is really important to view, like around like Palestine, for example, and it feels like it's almost getting into like the weird gray area of it being like a form of censorship.
Yes.
So that's sort of like where I like am a little bit like about them.
Yeah.
But I do still think like it's important so that people sort of have a say in what they do and don't see. But I think like one is that say intruding on like important information that people should have.
Yeah. Gets to avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
To clarify, trigger warnings and content warnings are often used interchangeably. However, they're not exactly the same thing. Content warnings tend to generally classify the content that will follow rather than alert about it. In fact, some groups refuse to use the marker of trigger due to its association with the sound of a gun, which can be seen in itself as violent. Similarly, others use the term content notes instead of these two terms. For the sake of this short series, I will be utilizing trigger warnings and content warnings depending on the context. To talk about general use and labeling of specific material, I will use content warnings as an umbrella term. On the other hand, trigger warnings will be more useful to talk about its relationship to post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and sensory reactions to challenging content. Let's refresh what trigger warnings are, specifically, and talk about where they come from. When you look up trigger warnings, the first definition that comes up is from Oxford Dictionary, and I'm quoting, "A statement at the start of a piece, writing, video, etc., alerting the reader or viewer to the fact that it contains potentially distressing material." Trigger warnings can be found almost everywhere. TV, streaming services, podcasts, radio shows, social media posts, music videos, syllabus at the beginning of conferences, newspapers, and many others. According to Sarah Colbert, the origins of trigger warnings relate to the emergence of PTSD as a clinical concept or tool. So I think it makes sense to start by touching on what post-traumatic stress disorder is, and I want to clarify that I am not an expert on this topic. The National Institute of Mental Health describes post-traumatic stress disorder as a disorder experienced after a shocking, scary, or dangerous event that continues to affect the person when exposed to things that remind them of the original experience. PTSD can be experienced by anyone. But scholars like Holly Taylor explain that marginalized people are more likely to be disproportionately affected by PTSD, since they're continuously exposed to violent situations and lack of support. While a PTSD diagnosis can be really useful to access resources and care, PTSD has been criticized as an alienating concept that aims to medicalize normal responses to trauma. It also has been challenged as a Western concept that is not applicable to other contexts where perpetual violence is a result of war and imperialism. For example, Sama Jabbar, who's a Palestinian psychiatrist, says that clinical definitions of PTSD can be applied to Palestinians since the dread and fear associated with the past is non-existent. The trauma continues to be reinforced due to occupation and genocide. So let's delve into some of the history. Sarah Colbert begins by explaining that the addition of PTSD into the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorder, also known as DSM, in 1980, it started with the collective trauma experienced by soldiers from the US during and after the occupation of Vietnam, and in general with imperial wars carried out by the US across the world. So these individuals come back from months of being exposed to violent circumstances, and that led medical professionals to coin this term. The author also ties the creation of PTSD to gender justice. Colbert says that it was during women's liberation in the 1970s that PTSD started to be used to describe gender-based violence experienced by women and moved away from the psychological and social impacts on male veterans. Despite this, some have pointed out the importance of knowing that psychiatry and psychology have played a role in the institutionalization and labeling of women and queer folks as hysteric or mentally unstable. Eventually, trigger warnings came to be utilized as a tool in medical settings towards people whose trauma can be relieved when exposed to specific sensory elements: see, hear, smell, touch, or what is known as triggers. However, what led to the mainstream use of trigger warnings and or content notes in the West was the internet, especially within feminist blogs that denounced online spaces that promoted harmful and misogynistic stereotypes. It was more during the 21st century that the usage of trigger warnings expanded to learning spaces and educational institutions such as universities, by students who viewed them as a form of accommodation in response to increased sexualized and gender-based violence on campus. Something that I wanted to point out that I noticed in this brief history on trigger warnings and their connection to PTSD is that trigger warnings and content warnings have been more popular in the context of the global north, aka Canada, the US, Europe, etc., which we need to keep in mind when talking about other contexts, as explained by people like Dr. Sama Jabbar. This is not to say that content warnings and trigger warnings are not useful out of these spaces, that we question them as a universal norm or sign of progress. During 2018 and 2020, Benjamin W. Bellett, a Harvard graduate student of psychology, carried out two experiments to understand the effect of trigger warnings on people who had been through traumatic events. According to the studies, Bellett found that trigger warnings, specifically, were not meaningfully helpful to those with histories of trauma. This study also argues that the use of trigger warnings can lead to the reinforcement of trauma as central to the identity of those who have been impacted by harm. Jones, Bellett, and McNally write, "Public arguments regarding trigger warnings have been politically charged, complex, and data poor. Recent research on trigger warnings can importantly inform or perhaps even settle some of these debates. The research suggests that trigger warnings are unhelpful for trauma survivors, college students, trauma-naive individuals, and mixed groups of participants. Given this consistent conclusion, we find no evidence-based reason for educators, administrators, or clinicians to use trigger warnings." Still, they conclude the study by saying that the scope of the study is too small to claim that content warnings should be fully abandoned, and that they in fact serve as an important caution for people and clinical professionals. Finally, they call for further research. This study has been widely used to argue against the use of content warnings in different settings. Still, not everyone agrees with the findings of the study. Harold H. Clapper, a university student from the US and the author of the article In Defense of Trigger Warnings, sees the potential danger of overstating the results of the findings by Bellett. They explain that the emphasis should not be placed on the quantitative positive effects of content warnings found, since they are not meant to make distress go away. Instead, the purpose is to foster autonomy for those who have experienced trauma. What Clapper is signaling is that content warnings are meant to give a choice for people to engage with material in ways that can reduce harm and their overall impact on someone who's coming across this with a personal history of trauma. An analogy that comes to mind when reading this is when your roommate or the person you live with invites over someone who you might not like without telling you. You open the door and you're left with no resources to deal with the situation. If you suddenly leave, it might make things really awkward. And if you force yourself to stay, it might create more harm to you and the people around. On the other hand, if your roommate texts you beforehand, you might decide to call a friend and ask them if you can stay at their place. Or you might even decide to confront the situation, but with tools and a plan in place that allows you to be okay with it. In both situations, the idea is not to deny the fact that you will feel uncomfortable or to make you change your mind about the person, but to allow you to choose on how you want to go about it. It provides you the autonomy to set limits and care for yourself. And more importantly, as Clapper also notes, content warnings are not meant to be a complete refusal of the value of the content that it is being noted. In the words of Emily J. M. Knox, content notes or trigger warnings should be understood as descriptive rather than prescriptive. In speaking about who content warnings are for and who they benefit, it was important for me to talk about what work is being done on the so-called UBC Vancouver campus around content warnings. I want to share an article written by Toba Gaster in the UBC, which is UBC's student paper since 1918. In this article titled, I Want to Know What I'm Getting Myself Into, Tova discusses the lack of consistency of content warnings in UBC classrooms, and they highlight the need to care about the histories and experiences that students bring into these spaces. Like Clapper, Tova challenges the reliance on empirical evidence in Bell's study that seems to have an undertone of skepticism towards more recent takes on learning and university spaces that take into consideration the well-being of students, which often views these demands of students for more accessible and equitable learning environments as oversensitive or needy. Toba also points out to the fact that the study does not recognize the role of gender, race, class, sexual orientation, citizenship, and or others when talking about the students' reaction to the use of content warnings, which has been a popular discussion on what content warnings mean for different people. They end the article by saying that to them, the usage of content warnings is not a clinical question, but an issue of transparency and trust in the classroom. As I have explored in this podcast, content warnings are a really dynamic topic with many layers. There are a lot of factors to consider when talking about their appropriate use, as well as their value in fostering more accessible and trauma-informed spaces. Because of this, I decided to further include another perspective on content warnings. For this, I interviewed Tiara Cash. Tiara Cash, she/her, is the owner and founder of Crown Beta LLC, which focuses on community, mindfulness, meta-awareness, and meaningful relationship building. Her career has involved thinking about mindfulness practices and their connections to athleticism, education, equity, social justice, and transformative art. Moreover, her work is centered on the impact of mindfulness on systematically marginalized and underrepresented populations. Now, let's listen to the conversation Tiara and I had on content warnings. Also, please be mindful there is distortion, as this interview was through Zoom.
I'm really excited and grateful to have Tiara at Rethinking Content Warnings. It is really nice to meet you, Tiara. My name is Kavila and I use they, she pronouns. Could you please introduce yourself by your name and pronouns?
Sure, yes. So my name is Tiara Cash and I use she, they pronouns.
So for this episode of Rethinking Content Warnings, I have broadly introduced the history and debates happening around the topic, which really is varied and rich. There is so much to this conversation. So the first question I have for you, what is your understanding of the purpose behind content warnings, often conflated with trigger warnings or content notes? Do you think that purpose varies or it is dependent on other things?
Yeah, from my understanding, I think the purpose of content warnings is to give people the opportunity to choose or opt in to particular, you know, spaces or particular media things, like things on Instagram, things on Facebook, you know, social media things in classrooms, to opt into that after seeing that there could be something that could affect them from this particular content. And my understanding is also that this was a way to support folks who are often systemically marginalized, to be able to, you know, hold space for that marginalization, because a lot of times, you know, people in those spaces, they are like the experiences of those people are sensationalized. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even, you know, put on display in a way that it wouldn't be for other folks. So it gives folks the opportunity to kind of opt into seeing those particular things or hearing those particular things when they are faced with particular content.
I really like how you talk about this sensationalization or kind of almost normalization of violence towards certain bodies or certain communities, absolutely, right? And I think that's something that it's kind of hard to navigate in terms of, like, as an individual, what is your responsibility to kind of be an spectator to certain realities, mm-hmm, but also how you have the autonomy and agency to see, like, this is a reality that lives on my skin, right? So mm-hmm, I get to maybe not engage in that way. So how do we think of, like, responsibility and the ways in which we engage, right? It's a really complicated subject.
Complicated, absolutely, yeah.
From your lived experience and positionality, how do you approach content warnings and or how do you relate to them?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I'm going to answer this question in a two-pronged approach. So the first, I think, I'll try as much as possible to kind of go back into the answer that you just talked about, which is this responsibility piece, right? And, you know, I'm not sure if folks in the podcast will have any background into my lived experience, but I am a Black woman with Indigenous heritage, a queer woman, and someone who is also neurodivergent and has a disability. And so there are, again, when we're thinking about systemically marginalized folks, there are a lot of identities that I could come into space with that are systemically oppressed. And so because of that, I understand intimately the intersections of, you know, not invoking emotion, undue emotion, I should say, on people who are also in these particular bodies or in these particular identities. And at the same time, trying as much as possible to get folks who are not a part of these identities to understand the experiences that these folks do have, right? Mm-hmm. And it is a balance. I think it's a balance. I think it's, you know, something that we have to be aware of when we're in these particular places. And I was actually a part of a panel not too long ago where we talked about, you know, what is our responsibility as people who could come in these, you know, in these spaces with these particular intersections, what is our responsibility to show violence, to show, you know, what's happening in these spaces, because we don't want to dehumanize people. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's like that piece I'm still working through. I don't have a real answer to get, right? Like, you know, I try as much as possible to use trigger warnings, to use content warnings specifically in spaces where it's like, okay, this could be something that I can perceive as harmful, which I know will probably mean that someone who's watching it is harmful as well. Mm-hmm. So that's that particular piece. But as someone who has these lived experiences, and I'll say specifically someone who lives in a Black body, which I have obviously grown up in, I'm from the South of the United States. And so, you know, I have had very, again, intimate experiences with the sensationalized ways in which media puts us on display, whether that be through violence, whether that be through, you know, sexualizing our bodies, whether that be through, you know, all these other ways. And so in living in a Black body, I find that a lot of times, especially here in Canada, because there is so much subtle anti-blackness, that there are no trigger warnings for things that I'm like, okay, you should have told me that was coming up, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And then I end up being affected by it. Mm-hmm. And this happens a lot, especially in academia, which is, you know, this place where we're supposed to be able to educate ourselves in these mm-hmm. in these aspects. But I find like it happens the most in class. It happens the most in you know, presentations that academics come and give, where mm-hmm. they're talking about the violence that, you know, happened to George Floyd and so many others. Mm-hmm. And then they show photos or they show mm-hmm. pictures, and it's like there's no content warning. They couldn't, and in some ways it's like they couldn't imagine that there could be someone in the audience mm-hmm. who could be, right? Who could mm-hmm. be of this particular background and affected by this. You know, it goes to show that when it comes to being on the receiving end of those, how important mm-hmm. they are in making sure that spaces are you know, truly a reflection of this inclusivity that we're trying to get to.
And I think something that I know personally, I feel like really affects me is like, who is showing these images, right? Who, like, who's behind that and for what purpose? Mm-hmm. Like right now I'm thinking, I used to have a social justice class in my first year, right? And I am Mexican. And so this prof decided to talk about race, right? Which is like, every Mexican has like a really sensitive yeah. reaction to it, you know?
Yeah.
And she was talking about it, and she decided to show like pictures of kids in like, ICE, camps, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just like, she's not Mexican. She's not like, that is not her positionality. And she Absolutely. Was like, look at these kids, look at them, how they're suffering. And it was just like, exactly what you're saying, not thinking, what about the people who are in the classroom, right? What about if someone has a personal connection to yes. this, you know? What if someone is like an undocumented migrant in this classroom? What are you going to provoke in that Absolutely. Person, right?
Yes. Yeah. yeah.
So thank you for that response. I think it makes a lot of sense. And
no, thank you for sharing your personal story there too. I think that you know, we have so many stories like this. I think that's mm-hmm. the biggest piece too, is like, we have so many stories where we do have this personal connection, and folks on the other end can't even imagine, you know, what mm-hmm. that would be like for us.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to ask you about your work. I know that you do your work around mindfulness, awareness, and community, right? Really loosely, I know there's yes. more detail to it. Could you talk more about these and the ways in which content warnings might be relevant to the work that you do?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for asking. So I'll start by saying the way that you described it actually is perfect. You know, it is this broad, but also realistic way of thinking about those three things: being mindful, understanding our own awareness, and thinking about how we are walking in community. Like, those three mm-hmm. things are really the ways in which I see my work being used, and tools and finding tools to again walk in community. So I think when we think about, you know, mindfulness and awareness, and specifically as it relates to content warnings, you know, the biggest piece around it is understanding that by practicing being mindful in those moments, by maybe mm-hmm. taking a moment to think about to hold space for how someone could be affected by this particular thing, it will give us the opportunity to see maybe there is a need, right, for this content warning, for this particular trigger warning. And I think that it goes back to the work that I do too. So the main kind of praxis that I work from is this framework called equitable mindfulness. And its whole premise is that mindfulness is not only something that can be practiced by everyone, but that there is also roots of mindfulness in this global majority community, in communities that are historically or have been historically systemically marginalized for their bodies. And that once we name those things, then we can see from, you know, we by outsiders can start to see how to engage in practices that are culturally relevant. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying all that to say that
in a way, content warnings remind me of culturally relevant practices, right? Mm. When we think about the ways in which we engage in community with people who we care about, we make sure that we have this, you know, pillow, this cushion that they can come into when we're expressing rage, or when we're expressing, you know, violence, when we're showing these particular things. We think about that. We think about the fact that this person's a part of my community and I want to care for them in this moment. So when considering equitable mindfulness, it gives us a way to think about the fact that this person, these people that we are showing, or this, you know, when we're talking about other situations that can be involved in the need for content warnings, that those things are things that can affect our communities. And so how are we mindful? How are we aware in the way that we're showing up so that our community members feel safe?
That's so, I love that. Like that, yeah, my mind is blown. It really reminds me, because I've also kind of been beginning around accessibility and what accessibility means and different types of accessibility we have or we're lacking in our society, right? Yeah. And so I feel this really connects to accessibility, right? Like how can we create a space or a vent or anything in our life that is accessible to people in a really intimate way, in a way that is not just standard, you know, that you understand like the deeper connections and how people access those things through their different perspectives and their different bodies, right? As you're saying. So
I love that when we think about accessibility justice and disability justice, that we're thinking about, you know, the ways in which we can see ourselves in the bodies of these individuals so that we can understand how creating accessible spaces are for everybody, right? And how it affects these folks. You're exactly right. And that is, right? That's this connection piece that I think we're missing when we're not utilizing things like content.
It reminds me of this term. I think it was Mia Mingus. So like intimate accessibility. And it's just like, to me, it just resonates a lot with like a deeper understanding and accessibility that is not just like a university, like a capitalist institution being like, oh, I'm going to put accessibility to be respectable, but rather like a more intimate accessibility where you're considering the person as a whole. So I really like that. I really, that was amazing. Thank you for sharing. And lastly, what are some things you would like us to stay with after this conversation?
Yeah, I think I like what you said, and I think I want to reiterate it and having folks understand that we are humans living a human experience in a real body. And that when things like content warnings are not included, then even if it's not meant to, it subtly dehumanizes us. It takes away from that human experience of me being a person who's worthy in this space. And so I think I want to leave folks with the understanding that, you know, as we're thinking about why these things matter, think about the fact that there's a human on the other side, and that's why it matters. Because by utilizing this tool, you will be giving some person, some human, the opportunity to feel more belonging in that space.
That is very beautiful.
Thank you.
It's been making me emotional. I'm like, oh, thank you very much for your time, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Kabil. I'm so happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me on the podcast.
Thank you for sharing your knowledge and your experiences.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and remember to join us for the second part of Rethinking Content Warnings.
Lodged in your right auricle, this blood clot or intraventricular block, physical shock, his miserable lot. Heart complications, his interpretation of reality. Bloody hellhound whose mastery of rapping leads this audience of naughty friends off the fence and onto God's property. Trampling the grass of godly quality, this indica sativa hybrid symbolizing Jesus Christ's id. Moving with the instinct of the atavist, beautifully, distinctly laughing at this, the conformist. Whose war is this? To preserve the meanings reserved and unfeelingly piercing a chamber of the heart, in danger his anger raging hard. This strange fanged painter whose art is bloody, this serial displayer of strongly ugly behavior, oddly funny. Majorly wrong, but lovely slayer song blaring on as they drug me. My cap door is attracting as the bat door the bull's ire. After the rapper turned actor on the funeral pyre, burned serene, he died of a condition of the heart. If you know what I mean, flying apart spiritually, smarter than me. Accidentally slicing the pulmonary artery. Bleedingly red, revealingly said to be feeling dead to me. Speaking in secretively codified nonsensical blah blah blah. Mortified blend of old fa la la. To the matter, these elementary particles of speech. Preach, little ghostwriter, preach. Biting a peach, sweetly as the teeth of the North Americans. Sugar in the air again.
So I just kept going. I just kept going and hoping I'm growing near. Well, that's good and fine. I spent all this time trying to find my way here. And I've been having me a real fun time. It feels so nice to know I'm gonna be all right. Don't take my fear.